understanding of it. We appreciate your patience. We got a several events in the month of June that requires to be out by 6. And then after June, we'll kind of be back to regular. So appreciate your patience with that. But let's pray together. Father, thank you for today, and thank you for our presence here. And thank you for empowering and equipping us to fight for justice and for the betterment of our people and our community. And so we pray to that end today that you would lead, guide, and direct our thoughts and our efforts. Let everything that comes across this microphone and everything that happens in this place today move us towards that end. So unite us in our efforts and empower us to get it done. And it is to that end that we pray. And everyone say it. Amen.
In the name of Allah God, the beneficent, the merciful, I bear witness that there is but one God. And I bear witness that Muhammad is his messenger. We thank him for Moses. We thank him for Jesus. We thank him for Muhammad. We thank him for our brother Oscar Grant and his family. And we thank him for each and every one of you. It is in the names of all of the righteous and all of those that have suffered the boot of oppression that I greet you. With the greeting words of peace, we say it in the Arabic language, As-salamu alaykum. How's everyone this evening? We certainly are honored to be here with you once again, standing for right in a world that is so very wrong. This afternoon, in the time we have, we want to make sure we bring everyone up to speed with the goings-on surrounding our call for justice in the murder of Brother Oscar, and our demand that justice be served against Johannes Mezenly and others. As we are speaking at this moment, I'm reading that the defense attorney for Johannes Mezenly, who is making his case of public opinion against holding the trial in Alameda County. I heard someone say that having the position of a judge and anyone that works in judicial life has on their shoulder great responsibility. Anytime we have in our hands the future of people, that is a great blessing, but if we do not handle it properly, it becomes a great burden. It is a blessing in that when human beings are able to advance their lives because you have provided a service toward humanity, then watching human beings advance their life as a result of your service will bring you joy. It's like the school teacher that watches the children in their class flowering before their very eyes. Many times the school teacher does not see the end result of their work because maybe I teach the third grade. I don't know what becomes of this child by the ninth grade because they may be in a different school. They may be in a different city. They may be in a different state. But the third grade teacher that has performed his or her duty, if they see this child 20 years later, and this child is no longer a child, but this child has become a productive citizen, this child has become a father, this child has become a mother, this child has become an elected official, this child has become a productive worker, this child has become a peacekeeper. And when you see that child, now an adult, would put a smile on the face of any teacher. There's great reward when we have responsibility for others and perform that duty capably and are able to see the end result of our labor and can say, thank God, this teaching stuff really works. For I had a child that could not read, and now 30 years later, that child is an attorney. We can say, thank God, and feel the blessed reward of knowing that I've done what would be pleasing to God in service to humanity. But then you've got the other side of the spectrum. If I have authority and this position of service to humanity and the people that I've been commissioned to serve do not advance their condition. In fact, as a result of the decisions I make or have made, that the very people that I've been commissioned to serve suffer. So I'm a teacher, but my students don't learn how to read. They're put out of class every day. I'm a teacher. Now, as a result of my being fast to render an unjust judgment against a child, this child, 30 years later, is not an attorney. This child has not become a responsible parent. This child has not become a productive worker. This child has not become an asset to society. In fact, this child appears to be a burden on society if the child has even survived the struggle of life. Well, now, if we are in these positions, such as a judge, an attorney, a law enforcement officer, a school teacher, a social worker, and we have taken the kind of stand which would render reward, then praise God. But if we have taken the kind of stand that says, I've taken the wrong stand, and in the wrongness of my stance, humanity has suffered, then know for a surety that that is the kind of house that God's judgment begins with. And the guilt that we carry when we made those kind of stances that have caused humanity not to advance, but to move backwards. That if there's any righteousness in us, we would feel the pain of those sorts of decisions and would in fact do the thing which would bring right to a system that has been so very wrong. And I'm bringing it out that way because Attorney Reynolds, the defense attorney for Johannes Mesley, is presenting in the public genre his argument to see the murder trial of Johannes Mesley removed from Alameda County. He's not making his argument before the judge who would render the decision. He's making the argument before the public in hope that he can garner enough public support. He's now saying that they don't believe that they can get a jury that is fair because whatever jury that they bring into Alameda County will fear that if their decision favors Johannes Mesley, that their decision would produce a riot. Well, first, you could say that for any controversial case that you fear that your decision would anger someone. Now, first, we all know Johannes Mesley is guilty. Whether or not he shot Oscar Grant is not even in debate. That's clear. The question, as the judge very capably stated in the preliminary hearing, is what was his intent? And what is the standard of law? And you mean to tell me that if you are tried in a county that because the crime you've committed is known by people, that that trial should be removed from the county? Well, first,
a Alameda County jury pool may not necessarily look like we look in this room. An Alameda County jury pool may look very much like a police union meeting. In other words, Alameda County is a big place. And those who respond to jury invitations. Well, many of us are very skeptical of the court process. I'll be clear with you. I've gotten a few jury invitations. I've rejected them all.
Well, jury pool, I moved. Well, jury pool, not available.
Now, I've never gone in questioning, and if I did go in, I might tell them, quite frankly, I'm not going to convict any black people because the prisons are already overfilled. And I think there is a better way to handle the crime. I might tell them that, quite frankly. I can tell them, quite frankly, that in my religious view, that I believe that all of our people on death row should be released. I can say that, and I can prove that is my view. Now, that being said, there may not be many prosecutors that want me sitting on the jury. So if I were to accept the invitation, then I might have an opportunity to explain myself, and I would probably find myself going home. Do you remember when Malcolm X was drafted? The history. Malcolm was drafted, as many others were drafted, as America was waging war against Korea, I believe. And when he got to the draft board, and they were giving him his quiz for whether or not he can serve in military service, he asked them some questions. They asked him some questions, he asked them some questions. And he said to them, "You mean you want me in the army?" "Oh yes, Malcolm." "You mean you'll give me a gun?" "Oh yes, Malcolm." "With bullets?" "Yes, Malcolm." And he said to them, "Well, good. That means I can shoot," in his words, "every white person that I see." And they told Malcolm, "Leave. You're not qualified for this that we're attempting to do." And of course, many know the great history of the great Muhammad Ali, that when he was drafted for service at Vietnam, he said, "The Vietnamese never called me by the N-word. I don't have any qualms with the Viet Cong. And it is against my religion to fight with people that are not fighting with me, and I won't go." They said, "We'll take your championship." He said, "Take it." He said, "We'll put you in jail. Take me. But I will not go and fight an unjust war on your behalf." And the reason that Muhammad Ali became the most notable face on the planet was because of that exceedingly bold stand that he took. It wasn't because he had fast hands. He's a great fighter, no doubt. And we can argue and debate the merits of his pugilistic skill. But what made Muhammad Ali was the bold stand he took for justice. So now, the systems of justice have been tilted against poor and dark people in America from the foundation of America. So for Mr. Raines now to come and argue that his man, Meza, can't get a fair trial in Alameda County, well, if it's because you think people think that he's guilty, well, we think that Meserly, we think that Peroni, we think that Domenici and all the others thought that Oscar Grant was guilty when they came to the platform and murdered him. The presumption of guilt was there on Oscar Grant. The presumption of guilt was there for all of the friends of Oscar Grant. The presumption of guilt is what drove Anthony Peroni to pull his taser without dialogue, without question, without interview of these young men and threaten them by torturing them, by making them to look at a taser being targeted on their bodies, which caused them to challenge him with their mouths and saying to him and his partner, words such as you're not a real cop. You're a rental cop. You just bark. In the least, they hurled an insult at a man that was equipped to hurl a bullet. A man and his partners who approached Oscar and his friends with the presumption of guilt. So for Mr. Raines to declare that his man can't get a fair shot in Alameda County. Question. When has the law ever been unfair to the police? The rioters rode into Oakland and walked out where the jury acquitted them. They were so guilty that one of the officers is still on the run. They were unable to bring one of them into trial. He fled, which is why we said that Johannes Mesley was a flight threat, because Oakland police had already proven that they will fly. And that is simply to suggest that the theory that the defense is offering, that Alameda County will not provide their client with a fair trial on the basis of,
well, you know, the judge said.
In fact, he accused the judge of misconduct. And the thing here is that Judge Clay, and we owe Judge Clay a round of applause. We appreciate the fact that the judge will speak his mind, which most judges do. Judges don't seem to shy away from, when rendering their decisions, what their thought process is. Now, I haven't been in court very often. I've seen a little court TV. And you watch these judges on court TV, don't they seem to give their opinions? Now, they're real judges. Judge Hatcher, I don't know all their names. Judge Brown. What's the brother in Chicago? What's his name? Mathis. Judge Mathis. Judge Judy. They seem to give their opinions. And they are real judges. You mean to tell me that if law enforcement officers come into a courtroom presenting themselves and obviously telling less than the truth, that a judge in rendering their judgment cannot acknowledge that what you said and what you did are two different things? In fact, if two judges said the same thing, maybe the problem is the BART police are telling the same lie, and it's so obvious that a judge would say in the first instance,
well, we're going to bind this over and we're going to charge you because what you're saying doesn't make any sense.
And it is certainly clear that it does not make sense for a law enforcement professional to declare that he thought somebody had a gun and he reached for a taser. It just doesn't make any sense. And as Judge Clay declared very clearly, that the only one that can address the state of mind of Johannes Mesley accurately is Johannes Mesley himself. They can't parade his lying partners to the stand before he gets there and hope that their lies would not be discovered. They lied before they even got to the point of saying, I heard him say, I'm going to tase him, step back. Well, Mr. Peroni had lied at least 3-4 times before he got to that point of testimony. And it was so clear that anybody in the courtroom could see Ms. Domenici. In fact, all of the officers who said, I didn't hear a gunshot, I heard a sound, all of them were lying. All of the officers who testified that they were overwhelmed by a crowd and chaos, all of them were lying. And were it not for videotape, that we
would have little or no knowledge of the magnitude of their lives, and in fact, were it not for videotape, we probably would not be in a trial right now. The problem we have is the system has been slanted toward protecting itself. It makes arguments toward protecting itself. When we complain about the way that the bailiffs were treating the young black males that were visiting the court procedure and being thrown out, the Alameda County Sheriff, who's responsible for securing the court building, told us face to face that, in words, no matter what you say against my officers, I will always assume that my officers are right, and I will never assume that my officers are guilty. Well, that would be fine if you were a judge in a courtroom, but you're not a judge in a courtroom. In a courtroom, you live with, theoretically, the presumption of innocence. Is that how U.S. law alleges to work? You have the presumption of innocence. In fact, you're innocent until proven guilty. But in police work, they don't need the presumption of innocence with you. They only need suspicion to make an arrest. Is that true? Mm-hmm. Arrests are the results of suspicion, not proven guilt. So if there is someone that points out the wrong of a law enforcement officer, it seemed to me the first thing that the authorities should do in law enforcement, you don't have to arrest the man, but at least question him. Do you know after Oscar was killed, they did not talk to the police officers responsible for about 6 or 7 hours? Now, if you or I shot somebody, would they give us 7 hours before a conversation?
Probably shoot you.
Yeah, they shoot first, ask you questions later. If you survive that, they'll have you in the hospital, brilliant. They will make an arrest of you. And they will question you. Now, they are duty bound to inform you of your rights. You have a right to remain silent, but they're not duty bound to wait before asking you a question. Y'all with me now? One of the arguments that Mr. Raines has made about why they should be moved out of the county is that when they arrested Mesley, they claimed that somebody asked them a question. I've never seen people arrested without being questioned. Now, in their questioning, you can say, I'm not saying nothing until I see my lawyer, which is more than likely what you should say. So if you are arrested, you have a right not to speak absent a lawyer. They can threaten you, well, if you don't talk to us now, we're going to increase the charge. Fine. I'm not talking. You have that right. Mr. Mesley had that right. But law enforcement has the duty to ask you, do you know anything about a bank being robbed? Do you know anything about this car being stolen? Do you know anything about someone's purse being snatched? They're duty bound to ask you. You don't have to answer, but they're duty bound to ask. You mean to tell me they question us all the time? In fact, sometimes they ask us questions that don't even make sense. Pull you over. Where are you going? Where am I going? What business is that of yours? Unless you thought I was going to break the law. If I'm driving my car at the police station door like a Terminator speeding up and you pull me over, hey, now you have a right to ask me a question because what I'm doing appears to be a threat. But if what I'm doing is driving up 27,
I have a right to drive up 27 most of the time. I understand some of the congregation here has found themselves under undue attention. Is that true? From law enforcement around here? So now all of a sudden, law enforcement is finding extra reasons to engage people coming into this parking lot. Now they have a right to ask a question, but you have a right to say, I'm not talking. Where are you going? They ask those questions all the time. Now there are questions they have a right to ask. May I see your ID? Registration. They have a right to ask that question. And they can ask whatever they want to ask, but I have an answer. Do you know so and so? I don't have to answer that question. Am I under arrest? Why don't I start asking questions? Is there a problem, officer? Am I under arrest? Can I help you? But they're asking me a question does not violate my right. Now, if they ask me a question while tightening cuffs and cutting my wrist, and with each question tighten up the cuffs some more, hoping that the pain would intimidate me into responding to their inquiry. Well, now we got a whole other issue happening here. If they pull out their gloves and put on their black leather gloves, I had an officer do that to me once. He said, I'm going to ask you something. He went to his car and got his black gloves, pulled out his club and put his gloves on real slow in my face. Well, maybe he thought that that kind of behavior would change my behavior. It did. It didn't change it toward tap dancing. It changed it toward fighting. But the point here is that they have a right to question Mr. Meserly as they have a right to question you. And if Mr. Meserly declared his right to an attorney and his right to remain silent, then it is what it is. So Mr. Raines argued that he can't get a fair trial in Alameda County because the police officer asked Meserly a question. Well, that means that all of us ought to have all of our trials in Baltimore County because the police ask us a question every time they stop us. So now as he's raging in the media that he can't get a fair trial because Cameron is standing with a megaphone in his hand and a poster because somebody took some chalk and honored Oscar Grant's trial and name on the sidewalk. Does that mean that Johannes Meserly cannot get a fair trial in Alameda County? Of course not. If the rioters can get a fair trial in Alameda County, then you know Johannes Meserly can get it. And by the way, public attention on these issues is limited. One of the reasons they allow these trials to take such time, in some cases it appears that they want to frustrate public interest. So when the first trial date came for Mr. Meserly and they delayed it in the name of officers having been murdered and their fear, their real fear, was that the officers would find themselves acting overtly aggressive against the protesters. It wasn't that the protesters would act against the officers, because the protesters have never acted against the officers. In every instance, the officers have acted against the protesters. In fact, it was officer action or misdeed of action that produced this murder in the first place. And so now the system, having had hundreds of years of favoring the officers and not the people, when the sheriff said to us that he never believes that his officers are wrong or guilty, well, he's saying something. And in every turn, right now, we're still wrestling with Bart over his oversight system that it is attempting to craft. They had a little vote the other day. Mr. Buford isn't here right now to report it out. I think Sister Beatrice was there when they cast the vote, but we debated the merits of what they call police oversight. And when we began the dialogue, we let them know right away, top of the meeting, that an auditor employed by BART is not sufficient, and that you would have a citizen oversight group that only hears from the auditor once a year or even once a month is insufficient. So what we said was that you need a civilian oversight that functions with power like a juror to hear the facts. An auditor is good in that if you need an on-scene investigator, and we need that. But that person ought not be solely responsible to the BART general manager. That person should be held accountable to the Civilian Oversight Review Board. Because the BART general manager, no matter how you slice it, this is about finance. For the BART general manager, this is not about justice. Since the murder of Oscar Grant, BART has gone on a public relations blitz. They're on the news every week for something. Here's the BART paint crew. They're painting BART this week. Here's new upholstery. Oh, BART board met and decided to raise the fares. Raise the fares. Because of the budget crisis, the board acted very responsibly. Now here, you got mayors being lynched, governors being run out of town. If our brother Obama wasn't so popular, they'd be driving him if they could get away with it. Because every government institution is in financial distress right now. Now, none are being spoken of favorably in the media except for BART. How did that happen? Oh, we're raising fees with a smile. And this will be good because we put new carpet on the train. We put new upholstery on the chairs. We're going to raise the BART fee. And we've acted so responsibly. Everything BART is doing right now is for PR. Everything. We are going to hire the black police to give us a top to bottom report. When? When do we get this report? Some things are already in the public record. Now the question becomes, of those things already in the public record, what is BART doing? Here you've got a police officer who, by her testimony, should never have been a police officer. I'm so frightened that when I ran up on the platform, I knew I was going to have to kill somebody or shoot somebody. Well, what are you afraid of? If you're that frightened, you shouldn't be a police officer. Maybe she should be not a school teacher because she'd be scared of your children.
Undertaker's helper.
Yeah, undertaker's helper. Maybe she should work at Park and Rec. Maybe, no, not Park and Rec, because Brothers in the Hood is at the park.
Send her to Afghanistan.
Yeah, we should send her to Afghanistan where she can find some peace. But now my point here is that a law enforcement officer to testify that there was such chaos. I used to hear that police were professional witnesses. In other words, the testimony of a law enforcement officer, here's that system again, tends to carry more weight than anyone else. They're trained observers. They're supposed to come into a room, in fact, they train them when they're shooting. In some instances, in SWAT training, for an example, who not to shoot. So they'll pop up a figure, a person, and they're supposed to take their gun in training and Be careful not to shoot the hostage and shoot the criminal. Right? They'll train them like that. But if she ran on that platform and said, I knew I was going to have to kill somebody, she was so out there with those words, the judge, he didn't even let the attorneys get at her. The judge stopped it. Excuse me, Miss Dominici, who were you going to shoot first? Now here, Oscar and his friends were unarmed. In fact, she was responding to a call, and that call did not include a call for response to an armed situation. For if they were an armed situation, there would have been a different call. That was in testimony as well. That the very first man that made the report to the BART operator was asked, is there any weapons involved? He answered, no. And when Peroni responded to the call, when he gets there, why did he have his taser in his hand in the first place? He was responding to a call of a scuffle, not of a weapon. Not of someone being out of their mind. I know it's New Year's, but everybody don't get drunk on New Year's Eve. I'm not going to ask you to raise your hands. But I was not drunk on New Year's Eve. And if I were on the bar, I would have been sober. Now, Pastor said he was not drunk on New Year's Eve. Now, everybody else keep it to yourself. But my point here is that there was no reason for Mr. Peroni to have ever had a weapon in his hand except that he heard that he was responding to black men. Now, the law had been slanted against black men for hundreds of years. And it does not begin with a slant that starts in the courtroom. It begins with a slant in the mind of the law enforcement officer. So when Miss Dominici was coming to the scene fearing that she was going to have to shoot somebody, maybe she heard that she was responding to a call of black men. Why would she have it in her mind that she would have to shoot somebody? Well, let's look at how the law has been slanted from the top to the bottom. I'm going to read you just a few words from a Supreme Court justice. Now, these words have become historical in nature, but they provide the base of what became the practice of United States courts where black people had been offended and attempted to demand rights. And this mindset remained in the law for 100 years. You all ready for it? Chief Justice Robert B. Taney. Dred Scott versus Sanford, 1857. In the opinion of the court, the legislation and history of the time and the language used in the Declaration of Independence show that neither the class of persons who had been imported as slaves nor their descendants, whether they had become free or not, were then acknowledged as part of the people, nor intended to be included in the general words used in that memorable instrument. The people meaning the U.S. Constitution, we the people, in order to form a more perfect union, to establish justice and ensure domestic tranquility. You all heard those beautiful words, right? Chief Justice Taney declared that that document never intended to include black people, free or slave, under the heading people. Now he goes on to read, they had for more than a century been regarded as beings of an inferior order and altogether unfit to associate with the white race either in social or political relations, and so far inferior that they had no rights which the white man was bound to respect and that the Negro might justly and lawfully be reduced to slavery for his benefit. Now here, Judge says, not only do we have no rights, but slavery benefited us. Which of those lynchings benefited us? Which of those whippings benefited us? So when Dominici gets in the courtroom and blames Oscar Grant for his own murder, maybe she thought that this was a teaching session for the rest of the Negroes. That you will know that if you ever are in an engagement with law enforcement, don't act like Oscar Grant, and it will benefit you to be as slave-like and docile as possible when law enforcement engages you. And the problem that these law enforcement practitioners had is that it's been hundreds of years, but it appears that finally we got a generation of young urban males that think free. Don't we have the freedom of speech? Well, not according to Judge Taney, but his statements have been overruled since that time. We have freedom of speech, don't we? In fact, they became very angry when rap music hit big in the West Coast. And our brothers from Compton, straight out of Compton, NWA. Now, I don't like the N-word as a common word to use of dialogue, but those brothers wrote a song, I think it was called, was it F the Police? Is that the name of the song? That's your generation. Your Easy E generation. Ice Cube being in nature. They wrote a song called F the Police. Now, I don't advocate that kind of language. That's why I'm using letters and not words. I don't think that'll help you win the fight if you're nose to nose with a law enforcement officer. I don't think it's going to make your punch any more forceful if you just use it. Now, if you're punching, okay, kia, whatever. Whatever comes out while punching. But if you're standing and talking, I don't think F the Police is really going to help you much. Y'all with me now? It's not going to help you much. It might encourage him to pull his club and use it. However, it's lawful. It's not wise. I wouldn't advise it. But it's lawful. I've seen children in the supermarket, not mine, but I've seen children in the supermarket cuss their parents. Now that's not lawful. And if the parent turns around and slaps their child and cusses them, well, that's a parental duty, right? Some agree, maybe some disagree. Now you may not expect or respect it as a duty in that regard, but certainly punishment of a child cussing their parent is warranted. Is that true? But now, Oscar Grant is not Mesley's child. Oscar Grant is certainly not Peroni's child. Oscar Grant and his friends are certainly no child of Miss Dominici. They are grown men exercising the freedom of speech. So if they say to them, you're not a real cop, well, you get paid, cop, $100,000 to listen to people who don't like your presence. And these people that declare these words are exercising their First Amendment right of speech. I have a right to think. If I think you're a pig, I can call you that. If I think you're a rental cop, I can call you that. If I don't think you're trained well, I can say that. If I don't like the way you look, I can call you ugly. If I don't like the way you smell, I can let you know. That's my American right under the First Amendment. Is that true? Now, I can't threaten you. But if you're older, is threatening to me, I can let you know. Excuse me, officer, can you back out my face? Your breath doesn't smell well. If you're not arresting me, I can step back. And when Peroni jumped in Oscar's face, is really, if Oscar were resisting, when Peroni jumped in his face and said, N-word, B-word, right? Oscar could have punched him in the jaw right then. If I jumped in your face, nose to nose, threatening in manner, well, at a certain point, you are entitled to personal space. At a certain point, when that space has been invaded, I have a right to protect myself. So even if a law enforcement officer jumped in my face, whoa, wait a minute, am I under arrest? If I'm under arrest to do that. Well, he didn't offer those words. He jumped in his face and said, N-word. Don't you know there are many of us that would have to hold ourselves? I don't know if I can hold Pastor back. He's from West Oakland. That's even worse. He's from East Oakland. I can't guarantee any law enforcement officer that if you jump in my brother's face and call him the N-word and the B-word in rapid fire succession, that he won't find the right hook, a knee to the groin, a way to take you down. And when it's over, we will get John Burns to defend him for self-defense. Because that officer had no right to jump in his nose, face to face, cussing racial epithets at him, and expect that he's supposed to just sit there and take it. Oscar and his friends didn't join the Marines. They didn't volunteer themselves to abuse. This is not an instance where the police can act like a drill sergeant. You're not my drill sergeant. You're a rental cop. So now I have a right to freedom of speech, but with your $100,000 salary, you have a duty to keep order first of yourself. So what we saw that evening were officers out of control. And for the defense to argue that the county is out of control, I don't know who's supposed to be in control. They said the judge is out of control. It said, we're out of control for holding up banners and demanding justice and complete peace. Every conflict that has been seen has been generated by law enforcement intervention. Our little brother JR taking pictures. Now, while he may have spoken words of his political view while taking the pictures, guess what? He's got that First Amendment right. So if he said to whomever, elected officials, police, y'all ain't right, stop terrorizing people, justice for Oscar Grant, JR was well within his right. Now, rather than allow him the exercise of his rights, they take him down, confiscate his camera, and accuse him of starting fires in a trash can. They don't have a match. They don't have a lighter. They don't have a witness. They don't have nothing but an opportunity to bring weight against those that are demanding justice. And while we're on that point, it appears that many of us that are bringing our voices and our persons to bear to demand justice are now being made public spectacle of somehow. Brother Jackie is here. Jack, now looking on TV, I said, brother, was that a police room? Video footage outside? I said, I was outside the courtroom. Here, there's a small incident, and it was in Hayward. In Hayward. And you look up, and a small incident. In terms of press, it was a small incident. A minor dispute between a crazy former landlord who goes off on a family because he was foreclosed on, that has rented the property. If I understand the property, the landlord loses the property. The bank takes the property. The renters are still in and out of the property, removing their things, and the landlord so angry that it ain't his house no more. It's the bank's house. And the renters that have access to that house now don't have to deal with the landlord at all because the bank owns the property. Is that how that is? But the landlord, having lost the house, decides he wants to confront the people that have been renting the house, that are moving out of the house and maybe still go in and out of that house. But you know, landlord, it ain't your house no more. And I feel for you because there are thousands of foreclosures happening like that all over Oakland. But he becomes angry. He threatens and challenges and abuses the tenants, and they protect themselves. Minor skirmish, but how did this end up on KTVU? How did it get to KTVU, Jack?
What the landlord did is he threw hot coffee in Jackie and Ivy's mother's face, and then he socked her and punched her. Then he was beating her up, so Jackie came out the house and beat him up.
Justifiably so.
She called the police. Police come. The police take Jackie, his mother, and his nephew to jail. Not the man who punched her.
So then, the racial profiling is so thick that many black office departments, black people subjected to criminal acts are not comfortable calling the police. Because on the arrival, racial profiling kicks in. When I was a little boy, junior high school, my mother's home was robbed. My brother and I, who were students, get home first. We discovered that the house had been broken into. We called our parents and said somebody broke in and took something. Parents at work, they said, okay, well, we'll call the police and we'll come home and look into it. Of course, like most black families that call the police, it took them hours to arrive. And when they arrived, do you know what these demons asked of my parents? They asked if my brother and I,
of course,
broke into the house and stole our parents' stuff. Now, we're like 12 years old. My brother, 15 years old. Now, imagine the police accusing a 12 and a 15-year-old who discovered the robbery, who reported it to our parents, and the police get to our house, and the first line of questioning they had was for me and my brother. My parents, they stopped them. No, you're not questioning our children. Thank you, and leave. I used to live on 54th. House was robbed. I called the police about 5 in the evening. They got to my home at about midnight. And when they came to my home and I wouldn't let them in the house, they acted as though I was a suspect. No, I'm not a suspect. Right now, you're the suspect. You are not walking through my house at midnight. What do you need to know? Well, what happened? Well, this, they stole the PlayStation, this, that, and other. Make the report, and I'll come get it. No, you're not coming through my, you disrespected me when you didn't respond to the call that the house was robbed in the first place. Men come to the door because you see a black man and act as though the man you're looking at himself must be a suspect. Is this an insurance scam? Get out of my house. In fact, I didn't have to ask them to get out because I didn't let them in.
That's the best.
But now, my point is, when the mindset of law suggests that black people are not people, and the response given to Brother Jack's family See, sometimes we think if somebody will allow our issue on television that they're our friend. Now, we appreciate that the murder of Oscar was publicized. And KTVU played a role in publicizing it. But never make the mistake of thinking that KTVU is our friend. Never make the mistake of thinking that ABC or CNN are our friends. None of these are our friends. So what you find them doing now is touting the storyline of Bart in his public relations blitz. What you find them now is carrying the storyline of Mr. Raines in his effort to put everyone in the court of public opinion. They want us to think that Jack is a thug. That Jackie is a thug. That all of those that were on the platform with Oscar and all of us that gathered in town hall meetings, we're all thugs that they ought to be frightened of. Therefore, remove this trial from Alameda County because those thugs down there in Alameda. So sisters and brothers, as we wind my part now, our demand for justice remains. The BART board, when it voted, those members, not the board, but the committee, and we weren't given any rules of conduct for this committee yet, as to what kind of process they're to use when a decision is voted on. So we, the public, have yet to be informed what that means, but they said, what type of oversight do you prefer? And when I learned, I cast my vote and I left. My vote was that the civilian citizen group must be empowered to not only see the auditor, but to see the accused officers and to render a decision or recommendation. And I added to what they offered that that civilian group should have sanctioning power. Well, sitting a couple of seats to my right were the two representatives of BART police unions. And of course, they voted down that offer. And when they got around to Mrs. Duggar, she voted down that offer. But everybody else, in essence, agreed with what I offered. And what we offer, that the civilians must be empowered and empaneled to make decisions on the guilt of an officer that does wrong. So I'm told the vote was something like 5-3. Something of that, 4-3.
No, 5-4.
5-4. However, we're not clear what they're going to do with that vote. Now, the expert they brought in who's crafted with other cities, jurisdictions, I forget the man's name.
You're not talking about Reginald Lyles?
No. He did the Sacramento oversight process. He did the Richmond oversight process. I forget the brother's name. But you can find it in the record. Now, he didn't jump on what we said, but quite frankly, we said more than any other oversight agency in the country. Well, how did we do that? When I said to them that the oversight board should have jury power to find both guilt and sanction the guilty, that does not exist in any law enforcement agency in the country's oversight. So while we respect that San Francisco has a system that is boasted of, or Berkeley has a system that is boasted of, I had a private meeting with a judge who said to me that none of those oversight processes work because none of them empower the oversight review committee to offer sanction when the police go wrong. I said, Judge, that's a wise judgment. I respect that. And came right back to BART, and that's what I told them. Now, Perhaps our brother had never seen a system like that. You know, we get locked in systems, or we get locked into our own ego. You know, if I were involved in the system somewhere, then maybe I think this is the only way it should be done. It's just something human beings have to grow out of, that's all. I respect my brother. But if these systems of oversight are not punishing, when the judge rendered the charge against Mr. Mezzanine, I think he said this is the first time in California history that a law enforcement officer has been charged with a homicide such as this. Some say first time in 15 years. Well, in other words, what the systems have produced has not necessarily been adequate. So let me close, because we want to also address in our system its inadequacies toward people of color in general. With the family of Brother Oscar, our demand for justice is beyond Oscar. Oscar, our brother, is a case. Like Rosa Parks, our sister, was a case. Like Dred Scott, where that decision came from, was a case. Like Brown versus Board was a case, all of these cases demanding that justice be served. And so this is not only about Oscar, but we're not going to rest on this case until it is solved, because if they do right in this case, then all of us have a better chance that it will go right in our cases, which some of us are going to face. And so our community council. Oh, let me just say this before I bring that on. That our effort against the district attorney, there's a pause button there just for a few minutes, because we want to see what the DA does with this argument to remove the case from the county. If the DA is weak, then we move very strong. If the DA is strong, we'll assess it at that point. He's not off the hook. We are not satisfied with the district attorney. Now, while he's now placed a trial attorney there, prosecutor, who seems to be doing a better job than the first one. But to be quite frank about it, he would not have gotten someone else if we didn't threaten to recall him. So he responded to public pressure. I would rather not have a DA that only responds to public pressure. I would rather see a DA that responds to doing what is right. Now, when the BART officers union rejected our offer, do you know what they said? They said, we don't want to. We told them that if the police chief refuses the recommendation of the civilian board, then the civilian board takes that recommendation to the BART board, who are elected officials, and place the facts in front of the elected officials and make them to render the disciplinary action against wayward police. Therefore, discipline against the wayward police lands in the hands of the public and not in the hands of a financially interested financial manager. Well, I'll close with this, that these systems have worked against us for many years. And as a result of these systems working against us, the state, now confronted with bankruptcy, and a great reason for its bankruptcy is the unjust incarceration and the unjust systems of incarceration that have afflicted the lives in the state of California of hundreds of thousands of people. In the last caravan, Brother Christopher said in his remarks that in the last 20 years, California has built 20 new prisons and one college. And as we're speaking to you, it is shutting down schools and districts all around us. They've not shut down a single prison. There's talk of shutting down San Quentin, but that's just because it's gotten so old and the property is so valuable that they feel as if they can do a little better if it's privatized property and put onto the open market. One brother said to me, he heard that there are some state prisons that California state elected officials are owners of land on. Now, I'm still trying to verify that. My sister's nodding her head. Maybe she's heard it as well. You heard that Jerry Brown owns some very good property? You heard some other people. So, you know, if they're privatizing prisons, you should know that who would go into the prison business unless they expected to make some money?
Right.
At heart, but those who gain personal benefit from the suffering of people. And so I want you to join me in receiving from our community council, our brother who's working hard against the death penalty. Please receive our brother Cameron and feel his support.
Brothers and sisters, I want to first of all thank Pastor Humphreys for once again letting us